Directions, Dikpalakas. There are how many directions? Technically speaking, 10 directions. North, south, east, west, that's four. Northeast, southeast, southwest, northwest, that's eight. Up and down, you got 10. Dikpal, Dashadik, or Dikpalakas. The personalities who are governing the different directions. Then there is Yamraj. He's also watching because he's accounting everything. And Yamraj is secretary. I mean, that's Yamraj. So all these persons are witnessing everything. And a person wonders, how do I know what I did last year, last life? I'm paying for it. Who's watching? Well, the many people are watching. And so Manu, standing on one leg, his to stand on one leg, it's not easy. It's a very unsteady position. He's standing very steadily. And when someone, let's say someone who doesn't have enough practice stands on one leg, then their contemplations are not on Krishna. Their contemplations are on how I don't fall down, right? Or how difficult it is. The attention goes somewhere else. But his attention is on Krishna as the witness. And he is the one who's created this entire world, and he's not a product of this world. So that's his first realization. Today's realization, Atmavasyam idam Vishwam, that he is not only present everywhere, but everything belongs to him. Now, as a king, it's a king is supposed to be the representative of Krishna for the general public. He's called Nrdevata. Nrdevata means God in the form of human being. Why is a king given that title? It's not that he is the king, that he's God, but that he has the capacity invested in him to take care of all the needs of his citizen. So in that sense, he is as good as God for them. And he is the one who yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati. He has to be able to put together and make sure all religious principles are being followed. Paritranaya sadhunam, vinashaya cha duskritam. Those are the functions that the kshatriya can also perform. Although he's not the supreme personality of Godhead, I'm using him as a reference. He can give people resources, he can punish them, he can behead them, he can do anything. If the king is happy, he gives you the pearls from his neck. If he's upset, he chops his head off. Kill him. That's all. He can decide. So he is extremely powerful. He can do whatever he likes. And it is very clear that the king, he owns all the property, all the money that's there. He owns people's lives, if you will, in the kingdom. Yet Manu's realization is, nothing belongs to me. Everything belongs to Krishna. So his first verse is he's very conscientious. Second, he's very detached. This is because a person, when they speak, they put words to their inner qualities. If a person is a liar, a compulsive liar, then whatever words they put to their speech is lying. If a person is a cheater, their words will be showing the qualities of cheating. And if a person is honest, their words will show honesty, right? Words bring to life our character for others to hear. It's what's inside gets sound vibration. So Badrinarayan Maharaj often says that his father told him the definition of diplomacy. He said, diplomacy is that skill by which if you tell a person to go to hell, they look forward to the trip. They look forward to the trip. It's such an art of how you speak, and you actually tell someone, "Go to hell." They're like, "Oh, really? Wow. When is the trip?" So our speech gives reflection to our character, and therefore, in the olden times, only a pandit would speak, and a fool should shut up. Because as soon as the fool speaks, in the whole crowd you can recognize, there is the fool. So in front of the spiritual master, generally one said, you don't speak too much. Because if you speak too much, all the foolishness is exposed. Of course, we're supposed to ask questions. Because Prabhupada said, in front of the spiritual master, one should behave. Or one is foolish. We don't know who we are. And the spiritual master is supposed to enlighten us. So here, Swayambhuva Manu is not only speaking his realizations because that's what is in his heart, but he's doing it for his sons and grandsons because they're all kings. And they're all meant to lead other human beings. So Prabhupada says, we get the word, the next I flipped the page too early. Oh, there it is. Sorry. Okay. The word man, or in Sanskrit, manushya, has been derived from the name Manu. For all the members of human society are descendants of the original Manu. Manu is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 1, where the Lord says, Imam Vivasvate Yogam Puruktavan Aham Avyayam Vivasvan Manave Praho Manur Ikshvakave Bravit. I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind. And Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. Swayambhuva Manu and Vaivasvata Manu have similar duties. Vaivasvata Manu was born of the sun god Vivasvan, and his son was Ikshvaku, the king of the earth. Since Manu is understood to be the original father of humanity, human society should follow his instructions. So he's speaking for us. And what's the spirit of this verse? Don't exploit the resources that are provided more than what is needed for you. So one may ask, how do I know what is needed for me? And the simple answer is, what we need depends upon our service. Whatever service we have for Krishna, that defines our needs. So, a particular person, depending upon their service, will have needs, both in quality and quantity, different from someone else who has a different service. And the idea is, one doesn't covet another's position. One doesn't covet another's facility. One learns to accept and take what is provided for oneself and be happy in that. Chanakya Pandit was asked, what is poison? Do you know the answer? What he gave? He said, poison is that which you take more than necessary. Anything you take and keep more than necessary is poison. Whether it's money, followers, whatever it is, you keep more than you need is poison. What does poison do? Poison kills. Or it seriously harms a certain organ or organs. So hoarding of resources poisons or harms the consciousness. It harms the consciousness in the sense of one thinking that either he is the Lord or that he is the master, the enjoyer of everything. Therefore, it says, tena tyaktena bhunjita. You can enjoy. No, there's no rule against enjoying. But enjoy according to one's capacity. And what is one's capacity of enjoyment? Whatever is within one's service. Generally, we wrongly think that devotees are not meant to enjoy. No, devotees are meant to enjoy the most. It is okay to feel a sense of joy in one's service. It's okay to feel joy in seeing the deities. But we don't come in front of Krishna and say, I don't have to be the enjoyer. I look at you, but I don't have any feelings of happiness. I eat your prasadam. No feelings of anything. I have to do your service. I do it like a machine, because if I enjoy, then I am being an exploiter. No. It is meant to bring the greatest enjoyment. This is the right method for enjoyment, by service, by centering it around Krishna. Any other enjoyment outside of Krishna, it doesn't exist, and therefore we suffer. We think it exists, it doesn't, and therefore we suffer. It's called Maya. So in this verse, he says, Ma grida kasya svedhanam. Do not covet another person's property. This verse is an indication, it doesn't say directly, but indirectly, it asks us to become free of envy. Because we want to infringe on another's property out of envy. Oh, they have something I don't have, I want. For example, Ravana is the embodiment of lust. The question is raised, why did Ravana go after Sita Devi? He was not like he was a starved brahmachari or he was a starved fellow who didn't get any girls and maybe this was the only opportunity and that he had to kidnap her. It's not like that. He had enough women in his palace. When Hanuman flew to Lanka and he saw how Ravana was living, he was taken aback for a moment. Especially Hanuman's a brahmachari, so whatever he has possessions are literally nothing. And he saw this guy, he was taken aback, he was shocked. Look, a whole city made of gold. It's not like he had a city made of walls were made of gold and inside, you know, plastic furniture. Imagine the walls were made of gold. What must be inside? Right? Beautiful, beautiful beds, silken white. They would say soft like the foam on milk. Usually that's the comparison that's given. So soft, silk, gold, tassels everywhere, rubies, diamonds studded the whole place. And the women, just the maid servants were so gorgeous. What to speak of the queens? And not one. So many of them. He was living in the midst of all this feminine beauty, including one of the most beautiful women on earth at that time, Mandodari. And Hanuman thinks, what kind of a fool Ravana is? He has everything. He has all these women. Why did he go after Lord Ram's wife? Because envy. He has someone that looks more beautiful. I want her. Ma agrida kasya svedhana. The first thing is ma. It's an instruction. So Manu is instructing not to covet, not to live a life of envy, that our attention is on what others have, but our attention is what we have gotten from Krishna and be happy with it. And here he's saying, quoting the verse from Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna spoke this to Vivaswan. Actually, in this chapter, fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna speaks these verses, idam parampara praptam, etc., Arjun's a little surprised. Whoa, hold on a second. Krishna, I'm about 75, 80 years old. You're about 100. It's not like the 80-year-old having a conversation with a 100-year-old. At that time, they were quite young and energetic. Arjuna fought the entire war when he was 75 years old. And he killed 11 Akshauhinis of warriors on the other side. And he had very extremely energetic, powerful, strong at 75. So he tells Krishna, well, hold on a second, you're not even 100 years old. Or maybe 100. How did you speak to Vivaswan? Krishna says in this chapter, Bahuni me janmani vititani tava arjuna. Tava cha arjuna. You and I have been together for many, many, many births. I remember everything, you don't. Why does Krishna remember everything? Because his body doesn't change. We forget because our body changes. So what incidents happened with this body, we don't remember when we get this body. Except a few, because it gives a sense of continuity. Actually, the body is perishing. So the living entity doesn't remember because his consciousness is fixed on the body. When the body changes, then memory goes away. But for Krishna, there is no material body per se. So he remembers everything. So he's saying, I'm speaking to you Bhagavad Gita, which I had spoken at least 200 million years ago. Wow. Then Prabhupada writes, Swayambhuva Manu instructs that whatever exists, not only in the spiritual world, but even within this material world, is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present everywhere as the Superconsciousness. We'll discuss that a little bit. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Kshetragyam Chapimam Vidhi Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. In every field, in other words, in every body, the Supreme Lord is existing as the Super Soul. The individual soul is given a body in which to live and act according to the instructions of the Supreme Person, and therefore the Supreme Person also exists within every body. We should not think that we are independent, rather, we should understand that we are allotted a certain portion of the total property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For example, how do we know we have some property allotted to us? If we analyze, our bodies are made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 7? These are my energies, Arjuna. Right? And he says, to you, I give you this much quantity of earth, water, fire, air, ether. You may have this body, earth, water, fire, air, ether. For a mosquito, he gets a very small quantity of earth, water, fire, air, ether. For the elephant, he gets earth, water, fire, air, ether. And the blue whale, the timingala fish, they all get his energy distributed in different proportions. But to everyone, he gives a very lot of false ego. Take that you can take. Freely you can take. Small body, large ego. Ego is always very large. That's why it doesn't fit the body. There's always difficulty. But those are his energies. Then everything around us are also his that he gives us. Especially money. We think it's our money. So there was a pastor at a church who made an announcement to his congregation. It was the beginning of the year. He says, ladies and gentlemen, I have some good news and bad news. The good news is that for the entire year, we have identified all the projects we want to work on. And we have identified all the money that we need. And we found that we have all the money also. And the bad news is that money is sitting in your pockets. It's actually Krishna's money. He's allowing us to put it in our pocket for some time. And we think, mine. So Swayambhu Manu is telling, at the time of death, we go without, that's why they send us naked, because no pockets. We have to leave everything and go. And everything in the world around us, Krishna exists as super consciousness. So not just as super consciousness, he has his own individual identity, but as super consciousness. So I've been thinking about this for the last few days. So for example, let's say, not in our body, we are the soul, and because we are present in this body, we find a sense of awareness everywhere in the body, right? Even in our sleep, if someone tickles our soul, S-O-L-E, there's a reflex. Or just by the soul being present in the body, almost unconsciously or subconsciously, we are breathing. We never catch ourselves thinking, hey, I'm breathing. We never think like that. We don't know all the processes that are happening inside. And all these movements are of the material body. The heart is beating, the liver is pumping certain bile, the pancreas is extracting or adding sugar, whatever it needs. The kidneys are separating the liquids and filling the bladder, and the intestines are holding on all the waste matter. The blood is flowing in the arteries and veins, going to the heart. The whole thing is working. And this is all matters moving, right? Just by the presence of the soul. All these material movements are going on. Now take that from our body into the universal framework. By the presence of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu or Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, we see that seasons come and go. So all the trees respond to it, the air responds to it. The sun and the moon are moving, all the stars are these are all material objects. In and of themselves, they cannot move. But by the presence of the super soul, everything is moving in the universal body. These things are moving, this is happening, everything is perfectly. And because it's Vishnu, he has perfect health, so his body is working perfectly. In our body, because we're whatever imperfect beings, there is some discrepancy. My liver works differently from yours. In that sense, it may not be working at full capacity. But Krishna's its whole thing is working in the universal body called the Virata body of Krishna. It's working. Oh, everything is working according to time and order. The sun, you can precisely tell every day what time it will rise. It's not like some traffic. Vivaswan's chariot got stuck. It's only a chariot with one wheel. It is on one end pivoted on Mount Mandara. There is one wheel to the chariot and a very long spoke. How long is the spoke? It is about all these measurements given in 5th canto, whatever. From Mount Mandara up to Loka mountains. That's the axle. And he has one wheel. And he has all the Adityas and the Rishis sitting, not facing where the chariot is going, but they're sitting facing Vivaswan. And they're reciting all these mantras as his chariot moves at 16,000 miles per second. It's a high speed Formula One track. It's never late, no accidents. 16,000 miles per second. The other day I was chanting Japa, and you can see the shadow line. Wherever the sun is observed, there's a shadow line. Here's there a shadow and here's there is sunlight. You give it 2 minutes or a minute and you see the shadow line moves quite a bit. That little movement here actually means the sun has moved quite a bit. In 24 hours, the sun comes back right here, wherever he's about to rise. So if you look at what is the circumference of the sun's movement from the earth as the center. So earth is, and sun is about what, 93 million miles, some number like that. That's the radius. With that radius, you can calculate what's the circumference of the movement. And in 24 hours, if he has to show up there, you run a calculation, it's about 16,000 miles per second. And always on time. And that's all happening because of the super consciousness, because of the presence of the super soul in the universal body. It's fascinating. And everything belongs to him. It's in his order. It's all moving by his will or his sanction, of course. Okay. So we should not think that we are independent. Next paragraph. This understanding will lead to perfect communism. Oh, communism? Communists think in terms of their own nations. But the spiritual communism is instructed here is not only nationwide, but universal. So there is a sense of communism, but not the way the political communism. Political communism is everything belongs to the state. You can't take anything. You can't own property, nothing. Prabhupada narrates that when in Russia, they were going through a financial crisis. There was a shortage of bread and the government had withheld all supplies of bread and milk. And everyone would stand in front of the church and pray to God, give us our daily bread. So the government would say, you're praying, are you getting bread? No. You come to us, you pray to us, we'll give you bread. So who's God? The government. That is this distorted idea of communism, where they think they are God. Nothing belongs to any nation or any individual person. Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the meaning of this verse. Atma vasyam idam sarvam. Whatever exists within this universe is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, one reference is to, I guess, this a little humorous. We call a place my house. Why? So let's say 1710, next door, you buy it. You call 1710 Westlunt your house. You don't call 1716 Westlunt your house. Why? Because you live there. So wherever you live, that is your house. Correct? Where does the super soul live? Everywhere. So where is his house? Everywhere. Everything is his house. That's what Atma Vasyam means. Wherever he lives everywhere. Everything belongs to him. Atma Vasyam Idam Sarvam. Everything, because he's everywhere. There is no place where he's not present. I can't say that is my house because I'm not living there. This is my car because I'm in this car. This is my house because I'm in this house. These are my clothes because I'm in these clothes. Krishna says, everything is mine because I'm everywhere. And everything has come from me. The modern communistic theory and also the idea of the United Nations can be reformed, indeed rectified, by the understanding that everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is not a creation of our intelligence, I mean, given the way our intelligence is working, we can hardly create anything. He has created us. Atma avasyam idam vishvam. Isha avasyam idam sarvam. This universal communism can solve all the problems of the world. That's what the communists thought too. But they could not solve any problems because they rejected God. Spiritual communism can solve all problems because it relieves the humanity of envy and makes Krishna, or makes our intelligence understand that Krishna is the proprietor of everything. Fight and infringement happens because of the mode of passion and ignorance where greed and lust manifest. And greed and lust or envy tell us that it's not enough. Whatever we have is not enough. That's the nature of greed. Greed means it's not satisfying. It's the opposite of being satisfied. One should learn from the Vedic literature that one's body is also not the property of the individual soul, but is given to the individual soul according to his karma. Karmana daivanetrena jantur deho papatteye. The 8,400,000 different bodily forms are machines given to the individual soul. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra arudhani maya. Yantra arudhani maya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of the living beings who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Brahmayan. Brahmayan means wandering. Brahmati. What is that verse about Brahmati? Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva. Brahmite means wandering. So this machine, body is a machine that just moves here and there, and basically Krishna is the GPS that directs, turn left, turn right, according to one's karma. So how much ever battery we have left in the GPS is our karma. So if our battery is gone, we're lost. Okay. The Lord as the super soul sits in everyone's heart and observes the various desires of the individual soul. The Lord is so merciful that he gives the living entity the opportunity to enjoy varieties of desires in suitable bodies, which are nothing but machines. Yantra arudhani maya. These machines are manufactured by material ingredients of the external energy, and thus the living entity enjoys or suffers according to his desires. This opportunity is given by the super soul. Everything belongs to the Supreme. Have you noticed? Every paragraph has this statement. Everything belongs to the Supreme. And therefore one should not usurp another's property. We have a tendency to manufacture many things. Especially nowadays, we are building skyscrapers and developing other material facilities. We should know, however, okay, before it comes to the ingredients, this idea of usurping another's property. Sometimes people have an objection about for reading Bhagavad Gita, because Bhagavad Gita is a book where, one, it was spoken at the brink of a war, and the actual guy who is supposed to fight the war has a peace message. I don't want to fight. I don't want to kill. And the one who's giving advice actually says, get up and fight. Kill all these persons. So people have a little problem with why. So one of the easier ways to explain it is, let's say, considering law in America, if someone walks into anyone's property and takes it away. So let's say your car is parked Someone walks in, opens the car, turns on the key, and drives it away. Do you say anything at all? Would you do anything? Probably not. Okay, someone else. There was a situation. There was a Japanese tourist who was in, I think, Louisiana or someplace. And I think either he was lost or he was thirsty. One of the things, I forget the detail. So he went into someone's front yard, knocked on their door because he wanted either directions or water. And the man from inside opened the door with a gun in his hand and shot him. And guess what? He was not charged. The man who shot was not charged because it was considered trespassing. Someone had entered his property. And so he was, I guess he pleaded self-defense. So now you take Arjuna's situation. His property was taken away by Duryodhan, and that too by cheating. His wife was taken away by Duryodhan, that too by cheating. Not only taken away, but disrobed in public. He and his brothers, including his wife and mother, they were poisoned, or not poisoned, they were put in a house, and that house was put on fire. So according to law, Arjuna is supposed to respond. And if he's not responding, then how will anyone have any faith in Kshatriyas? If all our police were walking around, you know, CPD, Chicago Police Department, they all come and surrender their guns and some crime's happening and we tell them, we need your help. Ahimsa, ahimsa, no, I cannot. Sorry, cannot help. Sorry. What would you do? Like, feel so insecure, so unsafe. Even with all the guns and police patrolling, we feel unsafe in the neighborhood I'm living in. Like, you never know. The other night, I guess I was in someone's home. We were, I guess, talking and laughing, and we couldn't hear it. But Rasika Manjari sends me a little text. Was those two gunshots that you heard? I was like, I didn't hear anything, but and we were like, well, maybe, because 3 weeks ago there were like, you know, 20 shots right outside our house. Ashok Prabhu had just checked his mail from the mailbox and walked indoors, and in 4 minutes after that, ta 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 ta, like 20 rounds, like, whoa! And the police was all over our home area searching, and one of my friends had landed from Washington DC, so they had blocked entire Chase Avenue, so he couldn't even drive on it. And my friend, he got out of the car wearing a black hooded sweatshirt, black hat with a backpack, and the police flashed lights in his eyes, like, who are you? It was like, I'm going to my friend's house right there. Just like they told him, run as fast as you can if you don't want to live. You know, you don't want to get shot. And right outside our house, Narahari's house, who's my next door neighbor, the police was searching through all the little bushes for gun shells, bullet shells, I think. If they had not, you know, sir, and we had called them, something's wrong. Hey, we all are following Arjuna, no fighting. It's like, whoa! But Krishna said, it's your duty to protect. You have to fight. So, in this case, Duryodhan took away property of any, or the whole Pandava property was taken away. And they were told, all right, they'll go to the forest. When they come back, give them their property. Oh yeah, sure. They came back from their 1 year of living incognito and all of that. And they said, can we please have the kingdom back? What kingdom? They said, okay, let's not argue with this guy. He's our brother. Can you give us 5 villages, please? Give us 5 small villages that even are inconsequential, whatever. Tinley Park, Cabrini Green. Just give us some 5 places. Don't give us Rogers Park. That's fine. Kishore Kishore there. Give us something. Evanston, okay, not necessary. Something. Far away from Batavia. Give us something. He said, not even space that fits under the tip of a needle. Forget it. So here, we should know that, however, that the ingredients for the skyscrapers in machines cannot be manufactured by anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole world is nothing but a combination of the five elements. Tejovarimridam yatha vinimayaha. He says five, but the Bhagavatam, in reference, instead of saying five, he lists three: earth, water, and fire. A skyscraper is a transformation of earth, water, and fire. Earth and water are combined and burned into bricks by fire, and a skyscraper is essentially a tall construction of bricks. Although the bricks may be manufactured by man, the ingredients of the bricks are not. Of course, a man as a manufacturer may accept a salary from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Salary from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is stated here, tena tyaktena bhunjita. One may construct a big skyscraper, but neither the constructor, nor the merchant, nor the worker can claim proprietorship. Proprietorship belongs to this person who has spent for the building. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has manufactured water, earth, air, fire, and the sky, and one can use these and take a salary. What's the salary? You can use it. You can use what Krishna has given. That's the salary. But you can't claim proprietorship. You can use. You can use as our service allows. This is perfect communism. Our tendency to construct great buildings should be used only for constructing large and valuable temples in which to install the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then our desire for construction will be fulfilled. Since all property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything should be offered to the Lord, and we should take only prasada. We should not fight among ourselves to take more than we need. As Narada said to Maharaj Yudhishthira, yavad bhriyet jatharam, tavat svatatam hi dehinam. Adhikam yo abhimanyeta sasteno dandam arhati. That's a whip that Narada Muni is cracking. This is in Bhagavatam 7.14. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. Tavat svatatam hi dehinam, adhikam yo, anyone who wants more, sastena, he is a thief. Dandam arhati, he is fit for punishment. So he says, as much as required to maintain body and soul together. Bhima Prabhu, who was here, told me a very beautiful story. I don't think I can finish the purport today. It's already 8:30, but I want to tell you the story. A very moving story. I don't think I can narrate it with the same beauty that he did, but hopefully we get the essence out of it. He spoke about Narmada Goswami. Narmada Goswami was a devotee within the ISKCON movement, and what had happened is we were teasing Naveen Krishna about he entering Vaikuntha only because he knows to speak, Telugu language. We were just pulling his leg. And Bhima Prabhu was, playing the fool with us, playing along. And he said, I'll tell you a story of one such person who was, from Andhra, wherever. He said, one day he just showed up. And he said, I want to join the Hare Krishna movement. So he looked, he was about 45, 50 years of age. So we asked him what he did, and he said, previously he was like the accountant for some major corporation. He was very good with numbers and bookkeeping and all that. He said, I want to join the Hare Krishna movement. And so they asked him, what about family, wife? You know, he said, no, my wife died many years ago. I have nobody in life. So they said, all right. So he began, because he knew accounting and what all, they asked him to work in the BBT warehouse, just making sure all the books are stocked and keeping stock and inventory. And he used to chant and very, very sincere devotee. And later he took initiation and sannyas from Kirtanananda Swami at that time. And in the late 86, around that time, things at the Nuskon with Kirtanananda Swami became very volatile, and Kirtanananda, that Swami, whoever, left Nuskon. And because he was his sannyas disciple, Narvada Goswami also left. But then very soon he realized that he couldn't even stay with Kirtanananda, that whole mess anymore. And so he just walked away and found himself a little spot in Dwaraka. He negotiated with somebody a little room that was enough to just lay his sleeping bag. And they promised to give him one cup of milk every day. So that's all he ate or drank. And he would go, in addition to the cup of milk, he would go to the Dwaraka, main Dwarakadish temple. And they would serve khichdi in the morning, so he would get a little handful of khichdi. And that's all he survived on. And the whole day, he found another Vaishnav from the Ramanuja Sampradaya, a sannyasi also. And both of them would spend their entire day standing in front of Dwarakadish, reciting shlokas from different scriptures. That's how they spent their day, studying and reciting shlokas. That's it. And so Bhima Prabhu, after many years, because of his, appreciation for Narmada Goswami's work with the BBT, service with the BBT, he went looking for him and found him in Dwaraka and told him, please come back. It's very important that you come back and be with the BBT. It's very pleasing to Prabhupada, so please come back. And his whole answer was, I'll think about it. And that's it. So many months passed, and suddenly one day, he walks right through the gate of ISKCON Juhu, walks into the main entrance. I don't know if you've known Juhu Temple, how it is. There's a gate, then you come in, and then there is on this side, entrance to the main building where there's the hotel or guest house. And on the other side is the entrance into the temple. So he walks right through the doors, comes into the temple. There's a beautiful quadrangle. He stands there and says, I want to know where Bhima Prabhu is. I've come back. So when Bhima Prabhu came running, he said, I'm here. Okay. Then he went in, he had like, he's called the Santa Claus beard, you know, shaved off, put back his sikh on, and again went back into the BBT warehouse and served there. And continued serving, became the BBT manager, blah, blah, blah. And after some years, naturally with age, his body started failing. He got this Parkinson's disease. So he used to sign all the checks for BBT, but with the Parkinson's disease, because the hand had tremors, he came to Bhima Prabhu and he said, I need to resign from the BBT. Why? He said, because my hand is shaking too much, I cannot sign any checks. I need now, you let me go. Okay, all these years you've served so nicely, where would you like to go? Just take me to Vrindavan. Fine. So they took him to Vrindavan, found him a little room to stay in. And the whole day, different devotees would come and read to him. And he would chant Hare Krishna the whole day. And in the first year, he progressively stopped eating. By the time 1 or 1.5 years, he had completely stopped eating. So the devotees were a little concerned. Why are you not eating anything? And his realization was, why should I maintain this body anymore when it cannot be used in Krishna's service? As long as it had the ability to be used in Krishna's service. I fed it nicely. But now it has no service. So why feed it? The Prabhupada's writing to maintain one's body, right? He said, no, there's no need to feed it because it is no use to Krishna's service. So he was determined to leave. And in the next year, he stopped drinking also. And the whole day was just hearing and chanting. And it was so clear in his mind, apparently, that he knew when he was going to leave his body. It was his determination. So he called Bhima Prabhu and everything, said, I'm ready to leave now. And so the third year, Karthik, the day after Prabhupada's disappearance, he left his body. So that was his realization, that as long as this body is being used in Krishna's service, I'm maintaining it. The day it cannot be, no need to maintain it. Wow. I mean, just to say it is only wow, what to mention, realizing it. And so then the devotees took him, the body, after he had left his body, they took him to the temple, to the Goshala, and made a samadhi in the Goshala for him, Narmada Goswami. So later they found his passport. And his passport, the name was changed to Narmada Goswami. And in India, if you have a passport, you have to have a relative's name. They said, any relatives? He said, one uncle. Uncle's name was Bhima Das. So he was joking with us. You can call me Uncle Bhima now. That was the only. And a few years after he passed away, some people came to the temple looking for him. And Bhima Prabhu said, who are you? Oh, we are his three sons. And this is our mother. Oh, he said that his wife had died. Yeah, he was already very renounced from the beginning. He was not at all interested in only things. When he finished all his responsibilities, he just walked away and took sannyas. He was a very detached person. So whenever I hear of maintaining body and soul, since that day, remembering Narvada Goswami Maharaj. Okay, I don't think I can finish the purport, the last paragraph. I'll just read it. Okay. Of course, we need to be maintained in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But since the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, has provided these necessities of life for the birds and bees, why not for mankind? There is no need for economic development. Everything is provided. Therefore, one should understand that everything belongs to Krishna, and with this idea, one may take prasada. However, if one interferes with the allotments of others, he is a thief. We should not accept more than what we actually need. Therefore, if by chance we get an abundance of money, we should always consider that it belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, who knows they have abundance of money? Who feels they have abundance of money? Money is one thing that you never feel that you have abundance of. In Krishna consciousness, we are getting sufficient money, but we should never think that the money belongs to us. It belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should be equally distributed to the workers, the devotees. No devotee should claim that any money or property belongs to him. If one thinks that any portion of property of this huge universe belongs to anyone, he is to be considered a thief and is punishable by the laws of nature. Daivi yesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. No one can surpass the vigilance of the material nature or hide his intentions from material nature. If human society unlawfully claims that the property of the universe, either partially or wholly, belongs to mankind, all of human society will be cursed as a society of thieves and will be punished by the laws of nature. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. We'll reserve comments for some other day. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
This is awesome.